Please note, this following podcast features bad language right from the fucking start. And now, dissecting the week's most shared news stories and separating the truth from the nonsense, it's the Ministry of Swooping.
Hello and welcome to episode 7 of the Ministry of Swooping, the podcast that does what you can't be bothered to do, look into the memes and stories doing the rounds on social media and working out if there's any truth to them. And yes, I know it is an unusual name, but then so is Dido Florian Cloud de Bonavial O'Malley Armstrong. We do this because online it's getting increasingly harder to tell the truth from the fiction, so we're here to tell you if you can trust a Facebook post from that morning you used to go to school with, we'll tell you whether to believe your idiot cousin's ramblings on Twitter. And we're going to have a little fun along the way. So settle in for some bad slash lazy investigative journalism and a whole heap of bullshit. I'm your host, the Secretary of State for Nonsense, Al Galpin, and joining me as my parliamentary undersecretaries on this week's show. They are the hosts of the Totally Unprepared Politics Show and 2009 Wimbledon Junior Boys Doubles Champions. It's Jack and Adder. Hi, boys.
How you doing, man?
How did you know about that?
It's amazing what you can find online. So how are you? You all right?
Yeah. We just fresh off having you on our show, which was a pleasure. Yeah. We had a great time with that. And now we're here to come and bring some of the totally unprepared vibe across to yours.
And we're super excited because I am very unprepared, as you would expect. Yeah. But these things sound interesting in the upcoming episode.
Hopefully we don't ruin it.
No, I'm sure you won't know at all. Well, seeing as you mentioned your podcast there, why don't you give guys a little brief discussion about what you do?
Well, yeah, we are Jack and Adder, Totally Unprepared Politics, founded just after the sort of Brexit referendum. And
we do loads of things, really. We've got YouTube, we do protest videos, we go down and talk to protesters and all the things they do. We also have a podcast, as you mentioned, where we just kind of, me, Adder, and whoever we can pull off the street or find online or anyone interesting at all that we can get our hands on, we bring them on to come chat about whatever's gone on that week in the news. Mm-hmm. And we just try and keep it light and try not get too bogged down in all the madness that's going on.
Essentially, the podcast is just a fun place where we can chat to experts, and then all the other stuff is like we give people a platform to say their own stuff. We go capture them on the streets and they get to say what they want unedited. So yeah, that's us.
No, that's good. Yeah, no, it was good fun coming on your show this past weekend.
We had fun.
That was good. Yeah, it was a good episode
that came up recently, so yeah
I cool. Very much enjoyed listening back to that.
So other than that, have you guys been up to anything this past week?
We haven't been filming anything this week, have we, Jack?
No, we haven't. Although I did go on a social media run yesterday looking for all of the upcoming marches and protests going on to put them down in the diary so we could go film them. But
yeah, we have the problem of we're based in Cambridge at the moment together, and that's where we grew up. But we both like studying in different places. So I think in the next week, we're both bound to leave and split up again. So it's kind of tough to get things going at this point, but yeah, we're going to try and do a couple bits before we break up.
We do have an EU special planned for tomorrow with a long-time EU activist.
Oh, that's so cool. Coming. I'll keep my eyes out for when that comes out then.
Thanks.
Cool. Okay, with some instructions over, should we get onto some good stuff? We got onto the news.
Yeah,
we've got some good stories this week. So I've scoured social media for some news stories and memes that are being shared and quite often taken at face value by people. And I dug a little deeper to try and find the truth behind the headlines and any maths behind the stats. So without any further ado, we'll go into story number one. The headline is £14 billion cash boost for schools. Now, this was a Conservative Party Facebook advert, which came out on the 9th of September, so seen all over Facebook. And it has made the national news this week. People might have seen this one. So this will be a relatively short one because I think it's been out there already since I started putting the show together. And the advert basically states that they're giving schools a record £14 billion, levering up per pupil funding across the country. And it links to a BBC News article about the funding. So have you guys seen or heard about this?
Yeah, I heard some of the, like, I would say, debunking of this. That's where I first heard it, was when the debunking was doing the rounds.
Well, because it's part of Boris Johnson's larger plan, isn't it? It's kind of like he's trying to put more money into schools and hospitals
policing and things like that.
But yeah.
I will say, so I only saw the debunking part of it up until today when I actually looked into the story. He sent us the links of what we had to check out on. And when I actually read into it...
You mean you weren't totally unprepared?
Leave me alone, Jack. When I looked into it, a very tiny bit, slightly unprepared. Yeah, slightly prepared this week. It seems that the figure actually checks out. It's just not the normal way they would report stuff is what everyone's claiming. But I would see that as the normal... If I was reporting like an increase over 3 years, I wouldn't say the per year increase. I would say the cumulative increase across 3 years. So yeah, I just was like, okay, fair enough. Yeah. But the problem here is that they're misrepresenting the BBC and changing the headline whilst keeping the BBC's thumbnail there. That's the problem.
So. And also avoiding the fact that aren't we currently in a dip where we're actually at the same funding levels as we were in like 2005? So we're basically like this, as much as you describe it as a levelling up, it's not levelling up to a new level, it's levelling up to a level that we've previously been.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a strange one, isn't it, really, it's amended the headline of a news article, but with the link directly to the news article. So anyone who actually
I don't know how that's even possible. Honestly, if somebody can tell me how they've actually done this, they've embedded that and then just chosen their own headline for it.
Yeah, within the description.
I don't know how they've managed that.
They must have somehow pulled the link. I don't know. Yeah. Conservative money.
Yeah. So the actual BBC headline is school spending multi-billion pound cash boost announcement. So there's not even a mention of the amount in the headline. The article then goes on to make mention of this 14 billion and says it's not normally how we talk about spending increases and appears to make the government seem more generous than it is in fact being. So the announcement sets out that basically compared to this year, spending will be 2.6 billion higher in 2020-21, 4.8 billion higher the year after, and 7.1 billion higher in 2022-23. So
Is it saying from this standpoint from now, or from each year?
Yeah. From now, not from each year.
So it's not cumulative.
And it also,
totally deceiving.
It also is ignoring inflation.
But wait, that makes absolutely zero sense. What?
Yeah.
So they said I've totally changed what I think. Sorry, lads. I was totally unprepared, Jack.
All right.
I've done the wrong preparation.
Yeah, so those figures do all add up to 14.5 billion, but that's generally not the way anyone looks at spending increases. And in fact, most news outlets didn't bother reporting that figure at all for that reason.
Tory party were running adverts claiming it, weren't they? And the strange thing also here is that, so obviously it was reported that it linked to the BBC article, but when I clicked through it, I was taken to an article on the Conservatives' own website. But apparently, there was two versions of the ad. One took the Conservative website.
There were various different versions of it around, when I found this online, fullfact.org, the charity fact-checking here in the UK, had spoken to the BBC, who told them that the headline on the article has never been changed, has never referred to the 14 billion. And so they believe, and quite rightly, that the ad is misleading, particularly for anyone who doesn't click through to the article. It's one of those things, advert, it sinks into your head, you just take it as fact. And for that reason, Facebook then removed the advert for breaching its advertising policies. The Full Fact also asked for a comment from the Tories, and a party spokesman said it was not their intention to misrepresent by using the headline copy with the news link, where the BBC's 7 billion figure is clearly displayed, but we are reviewing how our advert headlines match accompanying links.
Yeah. It's interesting how whenever people do something dodgy, they don't know exactly how they did it and they have to do a review. Yeah, they do something right, they're like, here's every detail of how we successfully did that correctly.
Very much.
Yeah,
so.
It would be really good for once if a party came out and went, this went really well, so now we're going to conduct a review to find out how it went well, so we can do it again.
One day. I just want to say, when I was checking into this, so you click through that link that you gave us and it takes you to a Facebook page, Facebook ad library.
Yeah.
So like you said, the advert has been... do you say it's taken down by Facebook now, Dave?
It is, yeah. So that basically, I didn't know about this until I found this link. I mean, I looked for... I found screenshots of the advert, but when I went into the Full Fact breakdown of it, they actually had this link in there. And so it shows you, even with the adverts been deleted, it will show you what it was and lets you see how it was, but also tells you how much money they've spent.
Yeah, it's a really interesting page, actually. And I guess this is part of Facebook's trying to readdress the image of their company and trying to make it more transparent, political spending at least.
Yeah.
This is a really cool page, actually. I think anyone can go check this out on, I think, anybody that's posting adverts, or it might just be any page that's posting ads related to political content. But you can see how much they're spending in total, how much they're spending on ads related to elections and things like that. And you can see every ad they post, including ones that are taken down. So interesting stuff.
Yeah, cool, definitely.
Facebook.
Yeah. So, relatively straightforward one to start the day with. Blatant lie, and it was even removed because of it. So
if Facebook's removed something, it's got to be pretty blatant as well, because
exactly, yes.
Notoriously hard to move.
Yeah. Now, this second one is one that came up on my Facebook feed, as shared by a friend of mine. Jack, do you want to go through the headline on this one for us?
Brexit disaster capitalism. 8 billion bet on no deal crash out by Boris Johnson's leave backers.
Jesus, I was reading some of the articles on this, and like, this is the kind of story that I'm going to be interested to see your information on, because from what I could read, I could make head nor tail really of this, or make any sense of it.
From the headline, which obviously is never what you should be drawing your conclusions from, my conclusion was that it was basically seemed quite obvious, this idea of there was people who were had funded the Leave campaign, who were also shorting on certain industries that they predicted would do worse after Brexit. Like, if, but that is, like I say, probably not at all what this headline was, because when you actually go into it, it's quite convoluted.
Well, no, that is what the headline is. But from my perspective, it's kind of like, well, yeah, of course that's the case. And also, it would be the case on anyway, because I think most financial institutions made the bet on us remaining, and then if we'd have remained, they'd have made a hell of a lot of cash. And I don't know if they were necessarily donating to the... Well, yeah, a lot of them came out in favour of the Remain campaign, so I don't know. It's a convoluted one, but go on, fill us in with some proper facts.
So that's our unprepared 2 cents.
Just to fill in the details here, so this was an article by the Byline Times that came out on the 11th of September. I'd never heard of them before I'd seen this come up.
They've got an interesting website.
It seems to be mentioned all over Facebook and Twitter around that day as well. Just a bit, basically, it's an article which makes a series of claims about donors to Vote Leave and the Boris Johnson's leadership campaign standing to profit from a no-deal Brexit, having previously done so with the referendum result. Firstly, do you know what a short position actually is?
A short position, what, in terms of in investment?
It
means when you basically you bet on the idea that the statistics are going to go the opposite way. They're going to go down rather than up.
It's a bet that a price of a particular share is going to fall in the near future. So this is a little breakdown for those who don't know. So, for example, an investor or fund will borrow a number of shares in a company from another investor, typically paying them some interest for the privilege. They then sell those shares onto a third party. If the share price then falls, they can buy the same number of shares back for a lower price, return them to the original investor they borrowed them from, and will have made a profit on the difference. Anyone taking out such a short position has to register that with the Financial Conduct Authority. If the net value of the shares are above 0.2% of the value of the company, and any shorting above 0.5% of the value of the company is publicly available. That's why they think they've got this information about this, because it's publicly available. Now, the key premise of the article is that a number of short positions taken out by UK firms dramatically increased after Boris Johnson announced his candidacy for the Tory leadership, and then reached a peak in the week that he was announced a winner. Again, from doing some checking, Full Facts again have done some digging for me on this one already, which is helpful, because they've looked in places I probably wouldn't have done. They believe that they have made a mistake in the analysis and only looked at the short positions that are still active at the time they gathered the data. Basically, short positions by their nature can only last a short period of time, after which the borrowed shares are then returned. So the data that the FCA provides is split into current ones, so anything that's still active, and historic ones that have been completed. Now, if you look at the current data, then you're obviously going to see a large number of stuff that's recent, very recent, compared to months ago. The older ones have been finished and will be under the historical data section. So we're not sure when the Byline Times gathered the data that they used, but using the most current data up to the 8th of September produces a graph that looks very similar in shape to the one in their article. But if you include all the historical data as well, then there's no spike for the period that they mention. So there's a large number were taken out at that period that are still open, but all the ones that have closed kind of even out, there's been no... No real peak. The apparent error has also then been spotted by several journalists on Twitter that I found. Someone from Global Witness and someone from the I newspaper have both said the same thing on Twitter. Full Fact actually asked Byline Times to share the data they'd used and were told that they'd be publishing another article explaining their methodology, which they have done, but that article then just says they are seeking to understand why others cannot replicate their findings. So, which sounds a little shady, to say the
least. It sounds like they're not trying to understand why their findings might be wrong. But
also the fact that they're going to be getting massive amounts of hits off this whole this song. Yeah. And they string it out.
Like you say, none of us had heard of these guys beforehand. Now here we are talking about them. So
exactly, it's worked.
And waiting on articles from them all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, so they've Financial Times also wrote an article about them as well, and they'd raised another couple of issues with the article, mainly the premise that a short position is necessarily a bet on no deal. For example, they point out that some companies would likely benefit from a no deal Brexit, so shorting them would effectively be betting against a no deal.
Mm-hmm. So but you could then.
Is there any breakdown of what these actual bets are on, what companies they're on?
They've not been able to work that out because Byline Times have made this statement saying, oh, these are UK companies. They're then refusing to say who those companies are. So it's basically impossible for anyone else to quantify their claims.
Okay.
And I'll just say, so this is not based on this case specifically, but they look like quite a small... Well, I don't know how big that they are as a news outlet, but they're not one of the top tier guys out there.
Yeah.
And right now, it's kind of quite easy to get away with these kind of, you know, very strong Leave or Remain stories that just have quite a lot of loose ties going on to these kind of things that people think are going on.
And in the fight for hits, everyone's going to get crazier and crazier with those stories, aren't they? Yeah. If you can pull something that is unverifiable out of, like...
And fresh.
Yeah,
it's very hard to find fresh stuff because all the new major news agents cover it. So you find something that's maybe a little bit less... easy to verify that they, you know, and then
and
you
is
that,
yeah. emotion like inducing, like in people when they see Brexit, disaster, capitalism.
This is the kind of story that gets, you know, 20,000 retweets on Twitter.
Exactly.
It's the kind of thing that people retweet without looking at because they're like, well, this is kind of aligns with what I want to say. Like,
which is why we're doing crowd work here right now to tell people that this is actually ridiculous. And if you are going to retweet it, at least look into whether or not it's true because it ain't.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what the show's about. And that's why we try and look at stuff from both sides of the argument. And obviously, the last couple of weeks has been quite a few Brexit stuff going around on both sides of the referendum.
On that note, I will say that there probably certainly is people on both sides of, like, whether they were leavers or remainers who are betting on what the outcome of Brexit will be. And we're not annoyed at any of them for doing that. So it's not necessarily an issue. And I think even if this case were to be true in that there were Boris Johnson backers who were doing that, which probably isn't a small case. It's probably not illegal or anything necessarily would be wrong.
Yeah, if it's illegal, then the
suggestion, I suppose, by the article is effectively saying the companies that who are paying or funding Boris to become leader stand to make a lot of money from a no-deal Brexit, so they want to put their money behind the person who's going to try and ensure that that happens.
Yeah, I think it's just par for the course with political donations is that, you know, you stand to gain from them winning, whether it's financial in the case of big business and CEOs and that, or whether it's just in terms of how you want things to be governed. Like, you donate to the person that you think is going to do what's best for you. And also, it's part of the nature of Boris getting into power that people are going to be shorting the position of whatever have you, because
so
it is
investing
more likely
isn't necessarily a political
deal.
Move. It doesn't represent that the party is particularly on one side or the other. It's just in like the business world that we exist in right now. It's a smart thing to be making these kind of investments in this time of turmoil.
And I think the majority of business in the UK actually backs the Remain position.
Yeah,
so.
I think so. But I think they would still be willing to short on the idea that things might not go well in a no deal if that happens, so that they can make some more money in a time when they would otherwise be damaged.
Yeah. That's true. That is quite possible. So, yeah, this one is basically impossible to prove whether that's true or not. So part of that in the maybe category. Our third story...
This made me giggle so much.
People may have seen this come around. Ada, do you want to read the headline on this one?
Yeah, reading the headline of this earlier killed me. So, I saw the memes going around a long time ago, but then when I read the headline, I just didn't link that to what it was. So... The headline, at least the title here, is, if you stay in the EU, there are known outcomes that have already been agreed as true by all sides. And it's in full capital. It just makes it so much more amazing.
Yeah. This is something that gets, like, we've seen in our Facebook group and many other Facebook groups, of just like when the argument gets heated about Brexit, someone chucks in the, what about the Lisbon Treaty, or what about all of these reasons? Yeah. Or all of these
and there
things,
was, like, it goes around constantly in many guises and forms. I've seen it quite a few times. But, like, you know, this long list of things that the Lisbon Treaty essentially, or people claim that the Lisbon Treaty forces us to be a part of by a certain date.
Yes.
So, sorry, we're tantalising the view here. Yeah. You want to give people the real full story.
Yeah, so it's, I don't know where the original version came from. I can't seem to track down the where that came from.
It says here, though, it says here seems to date back to December 2018, but I do remember when I first saw it crop up, which was, like, around that time, I was seeing reports saying that this had been around for like 4 or 5 years and come up previously and then resurfaced around the Brexit thing. So
yeah, everything I've seen seems to date, for this version of it anyway, seems to date back to December 2018. It's
when I saw this version of it, it was much bigger and grander than the versions I'd previously seen. Yeah. It had a whole addendum section added to the bottom of like possibilities. Like, it was mad.
This is like what happened.
We're gonna get into this. I'm so excited.
When these crazy things on the internet just get built on and built on and built on for years and years, and then eventually you get this crazy long one. Anyway, please.
Yeah. So this has been shared by pages such as Block the EU Brexit Payment and I'm a Brexiteer, also all in caps.
I love this trend.
So you can see the kind of people who are sharing this. So some elements of the list have been shared about, been talked about extensively online. And it basically, the gist of it, it's the often seen list of things that will happen when the Lisbon Treaty supposedly comes into force in 2020. Now, first off, it's quite easy to debunk certain aspects of this. I won't go touch into all of them because there are 20 something things on the list. I'm going to touch on the main ones,
but we could say just straight up right at the top that if there's somebody who's putting forward a list of information with 26 points in it, what have you, and, like, to me, even if 4 or 5 of them were debunked quite heavily, I would start to question the rest of it. So I think that's useful for anyone here, just before, because obviously you can't hit everything, but take that as a note.
Yeah, I mean, we could, if we, I mean, I could devote a whole episode to this and debunk every single one of them. But the biggest one to debunk is the Lisbon Treaty coming to force next year, the first phase. So the Lisbon Treaty is an agreement which made alterations to some of the key treaties setting out how the EU operates. It was agreed by all EU member countries in 2007 and came into force in 2009 and has been in place ever since. If the UK were to remain in the EU beyond the end of this year, the Lisbon Treaty won't suddenly change anything. Those things are already in effect. So that's the first thing, is that 2020 number is complete nonsense. In fact, I think in the earlier versions, it was March 2019, they said it would all come in, because obviously that's when the Brexit date originally was. So that's straight away. But let's go through a few of these things on the list. Number one, the UK, along with all existing members of the EU, lose their abstention veto in 2020, as laid down in the Lisbon Treaty, when the system changes to that of a majority acceptance with no abstentions or vetoes being allowed. Which,
I mean, it's angrily worded.
True or false?
Oh, and they all... It's false, completely false. The Lisbon Treaty did make changes to how the law gets passed in the EU, which reduced the scope of states' veto ability, but it didn't abolish veto powers. And those changes, like I said, are already in effect. They don't come into force in 2020. They are already in effect. And the term abstention veto is not part of EU law. Basically, EU legislation has to be approved by the Council of the EU, which is made up by ministerial representatives of the governments of all EU member states. Now, depending on the type of issue it's voting on, there's three different standards for passing those laws. A simple majority, so 15 out of the 28 states must agree. A qualified majority, where laws must be approved by at least 55% of states that have to represent at least 65% of the EU's population. Or a unanimous vote, where all voting states must agree, which therefore gives any single government a veto over that law. The Lisbon Treaty changed a number of policy areas from being ones that needed unanimity, thus giving states a veto, to ones that were decided by a qualified majority. So they took away some of those ones where everyone had to be unanimous. Therefore, certain countries did technically lose a veto over those types of laws because of the way they were voted
on. Can you just quickly explain to me how it works in the EU with the vetoes? Is it the same as the UN Security Council where certain like founding nations have them, or is it just the fact that every nation has a veto and just because everything needs to be decided by everyone?
Yeah, in certain instances, anyone has a veto. Like I say, if it's a law that requires a unanimous vote, anyone has a veto, because as soon as anyone says no to it, that's it. It doesn't happen. When it's a qualified majority.
Outside of that arena, are there nations that do have vetoes where other nations don't?
Basically, like I say, the qualified majority ones, laws have to be approved by 55% of the member states, which have to represent at least 65% of the EU's population. So that gives the UK, France and Germany a slight benefit because they've got bigger populations than other countries. So if they could be seen to be having a veto because they wouldn't hit necessarily the 65% if those countries didn't say yes to it. So that's point number one completely.
Number one.
Out of the water already. I feel though there's a slightly easier...
Number two. Or you want to move
number
past
two
that.
Is great. No, I'm touching number two. So number two mentions that all member nations will become states of a new federal nation of the EU by 2022. That's clearly laid out by the Lisbon Treaty with no exceptions or vetoes.
It's exactly the same as number one, is it not?
Except for we're going to federalise the whole EU.
Yeah. Okay, well, yeah.
So some...
But although I will say on the other side of this argument that who's the Brexit negotiator from Juncker. Brexit side? Nah, not Juncker. Oh, anyway.
Barnier.
Yeah, it might have been Barnier. No, I don't think it was Barnier either. He, the one with the crazy glasses is always about... That's a terrible description.
Yeah,
anyway,
I'm not sure.
He was at Lib Dem conference and he was talking about how the solution to the politics of the future is empires, and how America is basically an empire, India is basically an empire, China is basically an empire.
I agree.
The EU needs to be an empire.
I agree.
And the UK needs to be a part of it.
I agree.
I'm just saying.
That is the long-term goal of the EU as well. Yeah. They agree.
Which is why
that is
seems
why
like a
Leavers
claim.
Want to leave, because they know that too.
Yeah.
They disagree.
Which is why it seems like a legitimate claim that they might say that the EU...
No, I believe it's coming, but the
nation.
Claim here is that the Lisbon Treaty is...
Going to
do
it.
So I don't know, is that true or not? You tell us.
No.
Okay.
There's nothing in the Lisbon Treaty that talks about a federal nation. Like you say, some European politicians do want a more federal European system, like the US has got. There's no developed plans currently for that to happen.
Mm-hmm. And if it was to come to pass, then we would have a say on whether we wanted to be a part of it or leave at that point, right? Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like we've already decided this. And like,
but these things all build on each other, don't they? Because the first one's like, you don't get a veto anymore. And the second one's like, then they're going to do this to you. And you won't be able to veto it. And like, it just carries on.
Basically, the Lisbon Treaty, you can find the text of it online. Mm-hmm. You can search for it. If you search the word federal within it, you find a few mentions, but as in the Federal Republic of Germany, and talking about Austria and Belgium as well. It does not mention the year 2022 either. Mm-hmm. So another one that is complete nonsense. And tied in with that, number three, all member states must adopt the euro by 2022.
Which by the actual look of the pound and that at the moment, we might want to do soon. The way things are going.
Yeah.
And we won't be able to if we left.
Oh, dear. But there's an example for you of where any country can veto against having that. That's why places like Czech Republic and things that are part of the EU don't.
Yeah. I mean, there's 28 EU countries. 19 of them have the EU. Have the euro, sorry.
Have the euro.
So there's nine that don't. Both the UK and Denmark have opt-outs to joining. Ours says that the UK should be under no obligation to adopt it. In fact, the Lisbon Treaty specifically says the UK is under no obligation to join the euro. So, completely the opposite.
These are falling fast.
They really are.
And not on technicalities either.
No.
But what this really evidences is like what you said before about the fact people's unwillingness to actually go research a thing that they read. Like, literally,
number
that
one.
One, you can... The third one down, you can go look in the actual treaty that they're talking about, and it has a specific reference to that not being the case.
Yep.
But the fact is, most people, like you said before, aren't going to do
so
that,
right.
And they're just going to go take
the
it as read.
Number four is actually quite interesting to me, because I just wonder if you have facts on this, because I don't know.
Yeah.
About.
So number four says the London Stock Exchange will move to Frankfurt in 2020 and be integrated into the EU Stock Exchange, resulting in a loss of 200,000 plus jobs in the UK because of the relocation. And then in brackets it says this has already been pre-agreed and only on a holding pattern due to the Brexit negotiations.
Holding pattern.
suggesting that if Brexit does happen, the move is fully cancelled, but if not, the UK remains a member. It's full steam ahead for the move.
Oh, you know what kills me? I've just clocked holding pattern, and the guy that's claimed to have written this at the top
Richard Knocker, ex-pilot in the Gulf Wars. That's why he's dropping the little flight turn. Sorry, I didn't mean to derail that.
That's quite all right. So this is an element of truth to it, but not what it's suggesting. Basically, the London Stock Exchange and the Deutsche Börse, the German equivalent, announced in February 2016 that they have proposed a merger to combine their activities. The merger is not mentioned or related to the Lisbon Treaty in any way.
Are they private organisations?
I think so, yeah. Basically, the merger of them was actually blocked by the EU in March 2017 on the grounds that it risked creating a monopoly.
Oh, it is like when RBS tried to merge with ABN AMRO right before the Dutch bank. I think they called ABN AMRO. It might be ABN AMRO, but anyway, yeah. It would be like if the Scottish came out with being like, the EU's trying to steal our bank. It's like, no, literally two private businesses are trying to merge.
And then the EU didn't even let this one go through. So it's the exact opposite of what they're saying again. Have these people just gone and found the truth and then just like done the exact opposite?
Put it into like an antonym creator thing and just got the exact opposite of everything.
I think they've done things like with the first couple of stories, they see the headline, they assume it's true, and then they apply it to this. So this is what happens when you don't fact check something and then put it in something else of your own later.
And also, like, I'm pretty sure if you were really lazily fact checking, you could just like copy paste like the idea of any of these into Google and find a ton of nuts articles that back it up.
Because loads
say
of other
this
people
stuff.
Have done the same thing.
Exactly, loads of people have been propagating this stuff for years, so there's quite a bed of material there.
Yeah, there's a whole section of the internet where no one is disagreeing with this and everyone's just sharing these stories with each other.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. Yeah. So I'll skip a few. So numbers 7, 8 and 9 are basically about trade. It says the UK won't be able to make its own trade deals, the UK won't be able to set its own trade tariffs, and the UK won't be able to set its own trade quotas.
Is that not already the case?
Yes. That is already the case. So the UK, we can't strike our own trade deals as we're part of the EU because the EU trade deals come into force. So it all gets done on an EU-wide level.
Do you know that... Okay, so I'm not sure, but what was the name of it before it was the EU? Like the European
Economic Area.
Area. At that time, was it the case that we were able to still make trade deals outside? Were we at that point already bound by it?
I can't remember, to be honest. I don't know the details of that.
I don't know that either, I'm afraid.
No, I'm just wondering, because a lot of people hark back to that as if that was a great point of the EU's cooperation, and they don't want to go past that. But I think we were already at that stage then where we can.
I think at that time trade wasn't the problem. The problem would have been the fact that they were now moving to this thing where politics was part of it. It wasn't just a trade deal between a large number of European nations. It was now also a political institution that was going to be imposing law on countries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other thing is, as part of the EU, obviously we get a say in those trade deals because we're part of the negotiating team. And why wouldn't you want a bigger power to negotiate with other countries? So it's not a negative the way they've written it.
Our trade deals hopefully will carry much more weight than if it was just us on our own, you know?
Absolutely. So I'll skip again for a few more. Number 12 is a good one I quite like. UK loses control of its borders and enters the Schengen region by 2022. Also false. So the Schengen area is 22 EU countries and 4 non-EU countries, Iceland, Liechtenstein, Norway and Switzerland, which don't have internal border controls, which is why it's hilarious when any Brexiteers go from one country into Switzerland and go, oh, let's see, they can make it work. We'll make it work just like this, forgetting what Schengen is. So we've got, there are 6 EU countries that aren't a part of Schengen, including us. We have an opt-out from it and we have not signed the Schengen agreement. The agreement setting out our opt-out also can't be removed without the consent of the UK. So if the government did want to get rid of the opt-out and join Schengen, there would need to be a referendum on that. Yeah, so they can't just make us join. It has to be agreed by the UK people. So that was quite another straightforward one to debunk. Then there's number 14 I found interesting for the last line on the second. Number 14 is the UK loses control of its armed forces, including its nuclear deterrent. Also false. The EU doesn't have its own army, although some people do quite like that
idea. Would like it to,
The Lisbon Treaty actually sets out the EU's common security and defence policy shall include the progressive framing of a common union defence policy. That's a term that's written in the treaty.
What does that mean?
But it basically means... we might look at a common union defence policy, so we will all help defend each other.
Okay.
So
defensive alliances.
Yeah. So unlike other areas of EU decision making, the European Commission can't propose laws about security and defence, and it can't implement common defence policies unless the European Council unanimously approves. This effectively gives us a veto on any EU defence policy, because it's got to be one of those unanimous ones. So they can't force that on us or anyone. UK law also states that no such common EU defence powers can be handed from the UK to the EU without the approval of Parliament and a referendum on the decision. So again, if you want an EU army, that's another thing that's going to have a referendum.
Oh, imagine what that referendum would be like in the UK.
Less divisive, though, I think.
The treaty also doesn't say anything about the nuclear deterrent, but... the House of Commons Library says something relatively scary. It says, decision-making on the use of British nuclear weapons is a sovereign matter for the UK. There's no requirement to gain the approval of the United States or other NATO allies for their use, and only the Prime Minister can authorise an instruction to fire. So the thought of Boris is the one man in control of our nuclear weapons is...
I know. Quite... You know what? With Brexit, he's actually so distracted with this whole mess, I don't even think that I'm even thinking about him looking at that button. Probably hasn't seen it.
Yeah.
Probably won't by the time he gets kicked out. Yeah. Hopefully.
He might do that on his last day, be like, at least let me see it.
I'll touch on a couple more before I move on, because I don't want to get too bogged down in this. I know we've already looked at quite a few. So number 15 says the UK loses full control of its taxation policy. That's, again, not true. The EU has no direct role over how each member state raises taxes or sets tax rates.
Is it not semi-possibly true in the fact that the EU was just about to introduce, well, is introducing a ton of legislation to stop tax avoidance? I can't see how they're doing that EU-wide without adjusting national tax policies.
It's because every member state agreed to that.
Okay, fair enough.
So we're not losing control. Totally, we're in control enough of that, and we have agreed to take action. Or the previous EU MEPs agreed to that, and then when someone else came into power, they realised.
And a lot of people claim that is the reason for all this shady money trying to get us to leave the EU, because this was coming up. 2020,
keeping our mouth shut.
Yeah. Wise boy, he's trying to get investment from some high rollers, so he doesn't want to say anything.
Yeah.
And I think they're dodgy, so.
I'm sorry.
Have you read 22? I have no way of debunking it, but it's ridiculous. Well, the UK loses its right to call itself a nation in its own right.
The greatest aspect of that is again, full fact, they've written a list of them and debunked them all at length. And for number 22, they've just written, this isn't true. That is all they've written for number 22. It's like, of course we are a nation in our own right. Doesn't even need looking into.
Thing is, if you've read up to number 22, you're probably just accepting all of them now, no matter what they say. Yeah. Like, just chuck anything in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's why I would think they would be smart about it and go with, like, very verifiable at the top.
Yeah.
Slowly getting to, like, the more... Because if you've read down to 25, you can sneak in. But, like, they put nonsense in number 1, 2, 3, 4. Should I go on?
How many people do you think you actually rope in, though, by putting in the legitimate things at the top?
Oh, right, okay. Fair.
Because, like, most of the people who are going to keep reading aren't going to fact-check it anyway. The people who are going to fact-check it most of the time probably don't agree with it, so you're not going to rope them in that much by them being legit.
But they won't expose you so quick, because most people will only go to one fact-check effort, and then, like, some people go to two, a couple, or three, four, you know, it drops off.
I think it's a very small proportion of people first four sound legitimate, because most people aren't going to check any of them anyway.
Yeah.
Or they might pick one at random.
So that's basically the end of that. I'm not going to go into all the others, but there's a whole long list of things. Some of them repeat themselves. Some of them can be merged in together. There's probably only really...
Some of them are actually positives. I think they've just written down wrong in their list and they haven't realised they're actually better.
So that brings us to an end of our kind of political stories for the week. And we move on to a couple of stories that are a little lighter-hearted and a bit more... Hey, just breaking into this episode just to bring you a few words about a charity event I'm working on that I want you to know about. Now, back in 2017, I organised the Southampton Superpod, a live 36-hour podcast to raise money for Comic Relief. A heap of podcasts from all over the UK came to Southampton, and some shows even called in from Wales, Finland, the US, and even Australia. It was a wonderful event, lots of fun, and we raised a decent chunk of money. Now I'm aiming to do something similar for Sport Relief, but on a bigger scale, and hopefully raising even more money. Superpod 2020 will be a two-day podcasting event over the weekend of the 7th and 8th of March. I'm organising some great sporting and comedy podcasts to come along and be a part of the event. Now, these shows will mostly be free entry to the public, but there will be a special ticket-only headline act each evening. Details of the venue, headliners and ticket prices being worked on at present, and we're hoping to make some announcements soon. Until then, we'd love if you could follow us on social media and help us spread the word. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Sotton Superpod, that's S-O-T-O-N Superpod, and we have a Facebook page too, just search for Superpod 2020. For more information, head to our website, superpod.co.uk, and if you want to be involved in any way, please email me, info@superpod.co.uk. Well, fun. This next one came up on my Facebook feed, and I had to look into it to see if it was true.
I'm glad, because I really want to know, but yeah, I just didn't have the time. This is the one was hard to check into.
So the headline on this one is, Guy buries vodka 3 weeks before festival, then digs it up after entry. I saw it
the
on
thing the... That sells the... Sorry, the thing that sells the whole thing the most is just how cheery the picture of whoever it is holding the bottle looks in the headline. Yeah. Like, he looks happy with himself. I can believe he's done that.
It's a brilliant meme.
It is, yeah. So I saw this shared from the page called Social Laughs on Facebook. It's been in various newspapers like The Mirror, Independent and Daily Mail, and sites like Lad Bible and Vice have covered it as well. It's basically the picture of it is an image of a man with a bottle and a map with the caption that I read out. So I looked at some of those newspaper articles and read into them. Now, The Independent says that 3 weeks before New York City's popular Electric Zoo Festival took place, Alex Diamond visited the festival site and buried a water bottle filled with vodka, wrapped in a plastic bag for good measure. He pinned the...
Alex Diamond.
Yeah. He pinned the burial location on Google Maps so he'd remember exactly where the bottle was located.
That is smart.
And when he attended the festival on the 2nd of September, which was in 2017, he returned to the spot where the bottle had been buried and successfully retrieved it.
Was he aware of the blueprint of the festival out? Or like, because what if he had just put it underneath the main stage and then could never...
Festival happens annually, like, it's quite plausible that it would be in the same arrangement.
Yeah, but they always grow. They always grow. It could be very different.
Growing ones grow.
Yeah, you never know. They might decide to change where the stage is set one day and then he's screwed. Yeah. But I'm guessing he had some kind of idea that there wouldn't be a stage there. Maybe it was near a tree or something. I can't remember looking at the map now. But basically, he documented the heist in a whole Facebook post, which then went viral at the time. So it's about 2 years ago now.
This brilliant triptych of images, one him filling the bottle, one of this weird like map with a red X on it, and one with him grinning, holding the bottle next to him.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
The whole tale in those images. Picture says 1,000 words.
Yeah.
On the back of it, he actually created a new Facebook page called Festival Pro Tips, where he was been sharing his festival expertise with this tip and amongst others. So it seems, I don't know whether that was the plan, whether he's done this as a viral deliberately as a kind of publicity stunt for his...
If that was the case, then you wouldn't actually have to do it, because as far as I see, the only evidence we have of this is the claim and then the picture of him holding.
Yeah. Literally a picture of him...
These pictures don't actually prove anything at all.
All there is the claim. Yeah. And then
a resulting business venture.
Yes, exactly.
That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, and I mean, the source for all of these news stories is the man himself. There's no, I saw a guy digging up a bottle in a festival last week. It's always, he did this. Yeah, it was Electric Zoo.
Okay, I don't know what that is, but
it's probably a big one.
Some New York thing, yeah.
Yeah, fair.
So, yeah, we can't verify that it's true. Lots of newspapers are running with it as true, but the only source is the man who did it. So, and there's no video of him actually digging it up from what I can see. So,
did he not tell any of his friends beforehand? Like, surely he'd at least have someone backing him up or being like, nah, I didn't hear anything about that.
Yeah.
Unless he's a total lone wolf. You expect some sort of verification from a second source.
At the same time, though, maybe, like, this guy is a pro operator.
True.
When you're operating like this kind of level of special operations,
You can't tell anybody what's going on.
Adam, he posted it up on Facebook.
Yeah, afterwards, man, afterwards.
Yeah, if he'd have posted it before enough. And then carried, you know, followed through with it, then maybe we could believe him a bit more. But so unverifiable.
The whole thing, that'd have been great.
Yeah.
The burial and the digging
up.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a relatively short one after the previous story. Okay, it's back on track time-wise, at least. So we'll move on to story number five. Jack, it was your turn, I think, to look at the headline on this one.
What is this? Pepsi admits that Aquafina bottled water is just tap water.
Which I've just been wanting to say, like, everyone knows this, don't they?
What, that specifically there?
No, but that, like... all bottled water is just like tap water from somewhere. Like,
if it says spring water, is it not being taken out of the spring directly by the water factory rather than going into the mains and then out through a normal tap?
Highly well, yeah, okay. I'm not saying it comes from a tap in a sink.
No, I'm not
but
saying.
But I'm saying, like, ain't nothing different to it from, like, as far as I'm concerned. Like, maybe some brands.
Yeah, yeah.
But the majority of bottled water you see is equivalent to tap water. It's just maybe come from different countries.
From different countries, okay.
Doesn't really matter.
Okay. I've always considered that certain, like, bottled water companies, like, that actually call themselves spring water, they are taking water out of spring.
These companies flood the shelves of, like, the whole of the EU with this spring. Like, how? Where is these springs that they're tapping that is providing them these trillion... liters of water.
It says on the bottle. Unfortunately, I have no plastic water bottles to read, but they tell you where the water comes from.
Yeah, all right. Okay, all right. Maybe I'm being a bit.
But regardless, whole thing, but yeah, the Pepsi thing.
Sorry for again derailing every. I'm just. This is how I traditionally am on. You got a taste of me.
You were lucky to get through the whole intro without him derailing me. Honestly, I can never manage it.
I really wanted to. I was moving up to the mic, but you were quick enough on every gap that I couldn't just.
Yes, because I've said it too many times now. So this version of the story, it came from the Yucatan Times on the 11th of September. It's been shared a bunch of times, basically. It was also covered by True Activist back in 2015. And the gist suggests that Pepsi had just admitted that the water they're using is tap water. So the truth is that they haven't just admitted it at all. There's a news story online from 2007 where Reuters even reported that PepsiCo will spell out that Aquafina bottled water is made up with tap water, a concession to the growing environmental and political opposition to the bottled water industry. According to Corporate Accountability International, a US watchdog group, the world's number two beverage company will include the words public water source on Aquafina labels. If this helps clarify the fact that the water originates from public sources, then it's a reasonable thing to do, said Michelle Norton, a PepsiCola North American spokeswoman. So it isn't just happened at all. This happened over a decade ago.
But wait, did you say they're going to be denoting it on the bottles?
Yeah, so they said they were going to put on the labels that it was from a public water source.
Specifically PepsiCo. This is not like some kind of legislation to make people do it.
No, I don't believe it is.
That would be quite cool. That would be cool.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's some good stats I came up with. When I searched for this, I found Snopes had covered the 2015 version of the story. Because obviously it's all backdated to the original thing in 2007. So they say, just because water is coming from a public water source doesn't mean it's just tap water. Before that tap water gets bottled, it goes through various filtration and purification processes. In other words, they're not simply just turning on the tap and filling up bottles. The Aquafina website actually tells you what they do. They say it originates from public water sources and is then purified through a rigorous purification process. That process includes reverse osmosis and other filtering and purification methods. It removes things like chlorides, salts, and other substances that can affect a water's taste. Every bottle of Aquafina is produced at one of our water purification centres. That's how you know you're getting pure water and perfect taste consistently every time you open an Aquafina, anytime, anywhere.
So they purify it, but I guess they just all those companies have to do that as standard, just so that all the bottles do taste the same. Otherwise, you know, they're getting water from multiple sources, multiple factories, so it would slightly taste different. They need it to be the same every time. Yeah. So I think that's just par for the course of what they have to do. I don't think they're going above and beyond to
it's not
some kind of magical filtration that makes the water great in any kind of way.
And it's not uncommon for water companies to use public water. Coca-Cola also do it in their bottled water. In fact, there is a 2015 article from Mother Jones that reports 45% of bottled water in the US comes from the public water supply, and the other 55% comes from spring water. So it's about half and half.
Interesting. Okay.
That answers our argument at the start.
Yeah. So yeah, it may be filtered.
I do have one final question.
I think it would be quite good if they had to, by law, if it's just like public water supply, which is essentially what goes into taps, just have to put that on there.
Yeah, totally.
I think
because they're charging an arm and a leg for that
bottled
stuff.
Tap water and then bottled spring water.
I think once you know that fact, that basically, of course, the only two places they can come from is spring water or tap. So anything that's not called spring water must therefore just be from public water supply. So we'll move on to the last story. Ada, if you want to touch on what this one is.
Okay, it just says "see the difference," and it's got the meme's quite funny because it's got Will Smith pointing at.
Do you know where that meme is from? The Will Smith bit. That's him walking down the red carpet. This is like the only meme I think I know the origin of. It's Will Smith walking down the red carpet with his wife, and everyone trying to take pictures of him, and him being like, nah, check out my wife.
He's a cool dude. Yeah. But yeah, he's pointing out a picture of two black women and two white women, and the story is basically that they have all been charged with things to do with their children and education. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be the case that the black women got charged. Although, actually reading into it, it seems to me to be the case that one of the black women got charged, like, severely, way more than any of the others. And then the other two were quite relatively similar, one of the black women, one of the white women. But the meme claims that two white women were treated much disproportionately better than the black women.
Oh, right, okay, because it was the other one was only jailed for a short period of time, but was on probation or something like that.
Okay, the probation.
But I do think also... part of this is, sorry, I know we're always derailing right at the start of your stories.
That's right.
But I do think part of this story is the fact as well of maybe potentially the images taken of the women that are put on the meme. Where
is it the images that they were reported with?
The white women seem to be very
But like, what I will say, though, is that both of the black women, what they were doing was trying to get their kids better education by putting them in better schools and shit. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, in that sense, they were doing something very morally correct in that. Whereas the one of the white women is being accused of paying, or has been done for, paying to get the kid a better grade, which is morally reprehensible.
Yeah, that's not
and then the
education.
Other one, I'm not actually sure. It just said is awaiting sentence. So I'm not actually sure on the last case. So yeah, in that side of things, then definitely, yeah, it makes sense. But in the actually what they got charged with, then I wasn't 100% sure. Sorry.
Yeah. No, that's fine. So the women in question are the white women, the celebrities. They are actresses Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughlin.
Oh, they're celebrities.
Yeah.
I didn't know they were celebrities.
Yeah.
I'd never heard of any of their names.
Who
are these?
And then the others, the two African-American women are Tonya McDowell and Kelly Williams-Bolar. Now, McDowell was convicted of fraudulently sending her son to a better school in the wrong district while she was homeless. She spent 5 years in prison, got a 2-year suspended sentence and 5 years probation. Williams-Bolar was convicted of using her father's address to send her daughters to a district with better performing schools in Ohio. She was jailed for 10 days, sentenced to 3 years probation and fined $70,000. Felicity Huffman.
I didn't see the $70,000 fine. Yeah, that's pretty serious.
That's
I was thinking, I
just saw the 10 days thing and I was like, well, that's actually quite similar to the 14 days.
Yeah. But then also 3 years probation and 70 grand.
Yeah, okay, totally bad.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous, man.
And Huffman was given.
And also, why is this even illegal? Sorry, I'm derailing you again.
Why is it illegal?
They
did use fraudulent methods to get the kids into schools that they're not allowed in.
It's one of those things that morally to me feels like this idea.
Yeah, but you can't break laws
refusing...
to do things that are morally right and then say that you didn't break a law. You can say that what you've done is morally right, but
and
you can't
say that
you
the
law
should
law.
Be changed.
That's true, but you can't not be punished for it when it's changed after you've already done it and you did it whilst it was still punished.
You can't be given amnesty if the law is changed.
That's true. That is very true.
Sorry, again.
That's all right. No, so just to finish off with the two ladies, the actresses, Huffman was actually given a 14-day jail sentence this week and 250 hours of community service after she pled guilty of paying someone to adjust her daughter's grades. Loughlin pleaded
and
not guilty.
And also community service if you're a celebrity.
But what
it's
for?
Just like go and like do like public events with people. You don't necessarily have to just be like picking up litter and stuff.
Yeah.
I think just going and often giving speeches to like...
No, I'm not
vulnerable
sure. I think
kids
it's organised.
And stuff and can be
Yeah,
but the point is because of your influence, they're trying to use you for other things that don't involve necessarily the
outreach,
real punishments.
Yeah.
But I just want to say, so it just says in the doc, Loughlin pleaded not guilty and is still awaiting trial. But what It doesn't actually say anything about like what she.
I think she's accused of the same thing. She paid someone to adjust grades or something along those lines to get their kids into better colleges than they would otherwise have got into. So the two non-celebrity ladies were both charged in 2011. A different version of this meme did the rounds in 2016, comparing their convictions to the light sentencing in the sexual assault cases of college athletes Brock Turner and David Becker. And then this college admission scandal, which started out early this year, raised similar comparisons. So then we've ended up with this new version of the meme this year. So at the time that the meme came out, the two actresses had not been sentenced. Some people were quick to jump on reports that they thought Huffman could be either be given home confinement in lieu of jail time or no jail time at all with some kind of plea deal, although that turned out to be incorrect this week. The Los Angeles Times consulted a legal expert who said that Huffman could receive a light sentence because she was one of the first parents of dozens of defendants accused in the bribery scheme to plead guilty and express remorse, setting an example for others. Whereas Lachlan, on the other hand, could face a much stiffer penalty because she refused a plea bargain offered by prosecutors and she pleaded not guilty. So her and her fashion designer husband now face 20 years in prison if they are convicted of charges that they gained admission for the daughters to the University of Southern California by falsely claiming they were crew athletes, along with fraud and money laundering counts.
What?
So it turns
that
out
escalated
that she,
quickly.
Yeah. So it turns out that she could be get the biggest jail sentence of all four of these ladies, which I don't think people were expecting.
This was like a ring of celebrity parents paying for their kids to get into colleges.
Yeah, basically there was a middleman who was taking money from people and then approaching someone at the universities to make the changes, so they were profiteering. A middleman was profiteering.
Any idea how much trouble the universities are getting in for this? Because it seems like they've got a big part to play in this.
But the middleman.
I think it's
I'm presuming the middleman's been arrested. But.
Yeah, and I'm presuming it's somebody acting on their own within the university who has access to to do those things. Everything's been focused on obviously the celebrities involved. So I don't know what's happened.
Of course.
Other than that. Yeah. So it is kind of messy to compare these cases because they are a bit different. They are in different jurisdictions. However, a 2017 study by Loyola Law School demonstrated that black defendants with no criminal histories receive harsher punishments in plea bargains than their white counterparts. African Americans are also disproportionately more likely to be impacted by mass incarceration. In 2017, the UN cautioned that globally, the death penalty is largely reserved for the poor, while research showed that racial disparities in capital punishment sentencing in the US. Now, Williams Bolar was actually interviewed on the Today Show because this new thing came out, and she mentioned the comparisons between cases by saying that the socioeconomic backdrop is completely different. She's saying it's two different cases, and their celebrities definitely were all about the status, but they're all mums. Mothers want good education with the kids. That's what we have in common. But she did add, I do think they'll be treated differently because of their status. Their attorneys will argue that they're first-time offenders. Well, I was a first-time offender too.
So
a lie is a lie.
Do they get treated better, I guess, because they are celebrities in court?
Yeah, you definitely do. Certainly there's cases in which it's proven that because juries know
who
you are, you usually get the benefit of the doubt, unless
because they kind of know a bit about you and your character.
Yeah, exactly.
And also, you're way more likely to be able to afford a dope boy.
Yeah.
And also, like we were saying with community service, the punishments you will get will often be ones that.
Yeah, exactly.
You said that.
Yeah, well, I may have said we.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
I said we.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, like I say, if you rich white people basically benefit from the system. There's been lots of studies that show that is true.
That is nothing new, is it? Like we know that by now. We really need solutions.
Which does make it ironic that the juxtaposition that they've given is such a kind of poor one, when you probably could find much better ones along the same lines, because they certainly do exist.
Exactly. That's very true. So yeah, that is the truth of the story. There is a difference, but maybe not necessarily the difference that the meme is implying.
Mm.
Anyone listening, if you've seen something online or heard something that you want to know if it's true, let us know. We'll take a look at it, some of your suggested stories, and discuss them on the next episode. You can contact us on Twitter and Instagram, where we are at MOSwooping. You can email us at moswooping@gmail.com. You can leave us a voicemail on Anchor, where we are MOSwooping, funnily enough. We've also got a Facebook page where you can get updates from us, and we'll tell you about when new episodes are released, as well as a Facebook group where you can join the community and share fake stories that you found as well. You can work out what those are called, I'm sure, Ministry of Sweeping, for those who can't. Our next thing that we do is the Ministry of Sweeping fact quiz.
That was an incredibly professional transition. Just want to ruin it a little bit, but incredibly professional.
Well, thank you.
This is why I don't even try and be professional. I'd have ruined it.
So we give a series of 10 facts to our guests here, and you have to judge whether they're true or false, and then we put them on the Ministry of Sweeping leaderboard. So I'm going to let you guys do this as a pair.
I've only got 10. Okay.
I used to do this as a penalty shootout against each other, so, but
that
relied on having two guests every week, and I can't always get two guests every week, so now I do it as a leaderboard. So the people to beat are Jim Cliff and Karen Robinson, who both got 7 out of 10. So they're the two people. Well, the only two people on the leaderboard at present.
Best, but we can't promise anything.
I'm feeling very competitive, but also not very confident.
So here we go. You ready for this?
Of course we are.
As ready as I'll ever be.
Okay. Fact number one. Frank Sinatra actually had the first right of refusal to play John McClane in Die Hard because of a contractual clause from his role in The Detective.
What's the first right of refusal mean? You're allowed to...
It means he has to be offered the role first.
Okay. In the first Die Hard?
In Die Hard,
as the lead character?
As John McClane, yeah.
This would be... That would have just changed, like, the history of my life.
Can you imagine? You
know. I'm just going to go with true on this. Let's just go with true. Come on.
All right, I'm going to follow out of here, even though I think
it's just an aggressive start.
Well, it is a good start, because it is true.
Okay.
The source material for Die Hard is a book called called Roderick Thorpe, which was a sequel to The Detective. So then 73-year-old Frank Sinatra had right of refusal to play it because of his contract from the film version of The Detective. But he was 73, and he turned it down.
I was I can't remember when Die Hard came out, but I'm pretty sure it's at least like 40 years after Frank Sinatra was mainly famous. Yeah. So.
And I can't imagine Sinatra saying yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Oh, man, that would have made for an amazing film.
Think about how much bigger the cult following of that film would have been.
No, but they wouldn't have been able to draw it out to so many films, you know, like...
Well, Die Hard 4 would just have to be like... Crazy.
All right. Well,
we're one up. Yeah. Fact number two: the unicorn is the national animal of Scotland.
I think that's true.
Well, you're correct. It is true.
Oh, nice work, Jeff.
I had two just an instant yes in my head when you said it. I was like, but then I had no way backing it up.
Nice work.
Stuck with the gut.
Yeah.
So number three: goldfish have a 3-second memory.
That's false.
Yeah, I think so too.
That's false.
Yeah, that is false. It's up to 5 months.
Nice.
So 3 from 3. Number four, North Korea and Finland are separated by just one country.
No, because North Korea borders China, not Russia.
False.
I'm backing it.
Well, I've got it down as being true.
Ooh, okay.
North Korea actually shares a border with China, Russia, and South Korea. Russia is the one country separating them. Number five, the orange fruit was named after the colour.
I think it's the other way around.
I think the colour was named after the fruit.
Yeah. You are correct, it was the other way around.
Before the
late 15th century, orange was just considered a shade of red. Number six for you then. NASA spent millions of dollars creating an ultra-expensive space pen while the Russians used a pencil.
That's false.
That is false. NASA also used pencils. The space pen was developed by the Fisher Pen Company, so completely separate.
And also was an awesome a feature on a TV show I once watched where they were like, you have to make a pen that writes upside down, and they came up with this awesome like pressurized balloon on the bottom end of the pen that you could like squeeze to push ink out of. It might have been, I don't know.
Okay.
Number 7, the difference in time between when Tyrannosaurus Rex and Stegosaurus lived is greater than the difference between Tyrannosaurus Rex and now.
This is one I've heard so many times.
Is it?
Yeah.
I've never heard that one before, but like I've heard that phrasing of things, like, you know, Cleopatra and the pyramids was further apart than us and Cleopatra. I can believe it just because I don't think he's made it up.
Okay, go true.
True. Yeah, that is true.
Great. True. Great mind reading there, Adam.
We're relying on all our different skills.
So number 8, cats have the same number of toes on their front paws and back paws.
Oh, dear.
Both have lots of cats, but...
Oh, wait, so cats. I thought we said rats.
No, cats.
This is so bad of me. I really need...
What are you doing? Focus. Game face.
I am. This is my hearing's going, I think. I honestly think that they have the same, but I'm going to... My shout is that let's go with they have different.
Okay, I'm going to go with Adder's mind games again.
Holy.
So you're going false, then?
I'm scared on this one.
I don't know. Yes, maybe.
Yeah, we're going false.
Well, then you are correct. It is false.
Yes.
Like most four-legged mammals, they have 5 toes on their front paws, but the back paws only have 4. Scientists think it's because it helps them run faster. So we'll move on to number 9 then. If an astronaut requires a tool they don't have, NASA can email one up to them.
A tool they don't have?
3D print style. Yep. They have material maybe and they can email
it. It depends on the kind of tool. If it's a software tool, then quite possibly. And if it's something that... I don't... Oh, they probably do have 3D prints in there, Jack.
Yeah, you're
right.
Seeing they're taking them up there by now.
Let's just go with with your 3D printing thing.
No, I don't believe it now.
I don't believe it now either.
I'm going false.
Oh, okay, we're going to go false. But I think you're all right.
Oh, it is true, yeah. They've got a 3D printer.
Oh, Jack. You killed it. Nice work, man. Nice work. Oh,
your argument was spot on.
Of course it was right. Of course it was right. Oh, well.
Okay,
oh,
well. On to final one, number 10. You can still nip into leaderboard. Number 10.
Racing.
Number 10. Bullfrogs do not sleep.
Oh, no.
I know that some frogs eat wasps.
That's not useful, mate. Do fish sleep? Come on.
Do fish sleep? They use some fish sleep.
Some fish half sleep.
Yeah, half sleep and half other sleep. I reckon your mind games theory
I've already
is correct.
Forgotten all of that.
I reckon your mind games theory is correct, that he's made this one up because it's the last one.
So I think we're going to go with no, it's not true.
It's true.
No! We fell at the last hurdle.
As soon as I thought we had already equaled the record.
Your maths was terrible at that point.
Well, thought we'd only got one wrong. I can't remember us getting two wrong.
Yeah, but we had plenty of questions.
Yeah, it's slightly
If you say it's contentious, we're taking the point.
It is slightly contentious. Basically, there was a study in 1967. Bullfrogs, they don't sleep as like most, but they go into kind of rest states, and they were tested during their awake states and their rest states, and their reactions were exactly the same in both states, which made them think that they're not actually asleep like most animals are, although more recent scientists believe they should redo that study.
That's fair.
But according to the only study on file, it is true.
I agree with that. So, yeah, I agree with exactly
I'm
that phrasing.
I'm fighting for it.
According to that study, that is true.
Okay.
We haven't got any senses. So.
So can we have a 7.5? Verified,
we'll take the 7. We'll go joint first with everyone.
If the study's unverified in the end, we'll...
But my name is Adder, so can we alphabetically go first?
Oh, no. Let's just go down as time.
I relied on that in school all the time, man.
I was always middle of the register. I was you've got primacy terrible. And recency effect, and then you've got me that everyone forgets about right in the centre.
So you have the joy of being joint top. Everyone who's played this so far has all got top of the day. So you're joint top and joint bottom for this.
That's it.
So
when we come back next year, hopefully, we'll be able to top the leaderboard.
I'm going to do much mastermind level research beforehand. I'm going to find all my old QI books.
This is us being a bit presumptuous. You'd like us back, but we'd love to come back and try again for this leaderboard. Like right now, I want to try next week.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get you on again sometime soon, I'm sure.
Yeah.
That'd be great. So that's the end of the quiz. The show is basically now coming to a close. So before we go, I do a little bit of begging. So anyone who's listened this far through, then thank you very much. We're honoured to have you with us. Do hit that subscribe button. Make sure you don't miss any future episodes. And if you have a minute, do give us a rating and a review on whatever system you're listening to us on. And don't forget to follow us on all the social medias and send us any new stories you want looking into. Contact details are coming up in just a moment. So do you want to mention where people can find you online again, guys?
So we are Totally Unprepared Politics, or At The Top Show. You can find us on Twitter at The Top Show, or you can find us on YouTube typing in Totally Unprepared Politics. We've got like podcasts, we've got YouTube protest videos, we've got debates, we've got long interviews, we've got pretty much everything going. We've got
basically
many
whatever
plans
format
for the future.
You like, go to that and type in Totally Unprepared Politics, and we will be there doing our thing on
whether
it.
That is text-based online discussion, watching videos, or listening to audio, we're there with some kind of unprepared political analysis. So yeah, it's more of an entertainment show than real. I'll just say that.
So just to round it off, to make it feel bookended, this rambly little plug we've done, just search Totally Unprepared Politics anywhere you want.
Thank you.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. Now we end the show with our good friend Rando Cardrician, who picks our episode subtitle. So this is obviously one of the rules from Cards Against Humanity, which is where we got our name from in the first place. So I've drawn two random cards here for our subtitle. So this week it is... Today on the Jeremy Kyle Show, help, my son is inserting a mason jar into my anus. So
well, we are honoured to have appeared on that episode.
And on that unsavoury note, it is time to say goodbye and thanks for listening. Take care, everyone. Goodbye.
Thank you very much. Bye. Goodbye, everyone. Peace.